former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lots of football news and notes to break down over the next 2 hours. Win totals, awards markets, and contract negotiations. Oh my. Plus, could we end up with a pair of sweeps in the NBA conference finals? You heard that laugh alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Welcome into the show, this Memorial Day Monday edition of the program, Michael. I know for as excited as we are to talk about sports, you're also, like me, trying to remember the importance of today and what this day really is about.
Yeah, I think we sometimes confuse Veteran Day with Memorial Day, which started out as Decoration Day back in 1868 when they honored the Union and Confederate soldiers at Arlington Cemetery. And I think that's obviously all the things that we share and enjoy in our life, no matter how much we want to argue amongst one another, freedom is something that we've gained from these people making the ultimate sacrifice. And today is more than just barbecues, Little League baseball, and hot dogs and hamburgers and all those things. It's about really being thankful for where we are and the freedom we enjoy from those who gave up their sacrifices in life.
No question about it. Enjoy the barbecues, sweat out your bets, but take a moment to remember why we have the ability to be able to do those things. It's because of the people
to
that did.
To sweat it out.
Exactly.
Right. To sweat out those bets.
Literally and figuratively. There we go. Also on the show today, in about 30 minutes, we'll have Thomas Gable join us, as he always does on a Monday, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And also coming up in hour two, Herm Edwards, former NFL head coach and player turned ESPN analyst. We'll get him on the Progressive guest line as well to talk through some of the big headlines in the National Football League. But let's go to the NBA first, Michael, because how about those Dallas Mavericks, who take a commanding 3-0 lead? You have been on Dallas all the way through. What impressed you most about the way they handled business to go up 3-0 yesterday?
You know, I think sometimes, and look, I think Kyrie, we confuse off the court with on the court. Kyrie has always been an elite player. Now, there's been some things that have been a little bit uncomfortable around what he said and how he's behaved. I get that. But since he's been in Dallas with Jason Kidd, he has been a completely different player. And the player is elite. The player's elite. And Luka's elite. And this trade that they made at the trading deadline to get P.J. Washington to come in, to get Gafford to come in, has been changed their team. They went from being in the middle of the pack defensively to being a better team defensively. Luka's playing better defense. I think we just overlooked them because they were in the West. Minnesota was getting so much attention. You know, Oklahoma City was getting all the attention, those teams, and Denver being the champion of last year. But this was always a good team because they have depth, they're well coached, and they have two elite players that in the fourth quarter can win games. And we saw it. Kyrie went into the fourth quarter with 19 points. He ends up with 33. You know, Luka makes critical plays down the stretch for them, and they're able to outscore their opponent 29-20 in the fourth quarter to win the game. So I've always felt like they've been undervalued in the marketplace. And I think now today we're starting to catch up to it a little bit. Like they got a chance to sweep Minnesota. You know, they beat Oklahoma City. I mean, the Clippers, which have this huge payroll and all the superstars, they took care of business there. I mean, last night they lose Lively, and they still were able. Gafford came through and played. Yeah. So I'm really happy for Dallas. I'm happy for Jason Kidd, but I'm enjoying watching the team play.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Gafford there, because the two unbelievable all-ball blocks that he has when you need them, and then the alley-oop slam at the end of the game, like, he was somebody who stepped up. But to your point, I think the big difference in this game has been the superstars for the Mavericks doing their part, whereas for the Minnesota Timberwolves, we haven't seen that as much. Anthony Edwards' shooting percentage down. Karl Anthony Towns struggling massively. But then you have Luka and Kyrie, who the step-back threes from Luka every time. Beautiful. That shot over Rudy Gobert. Kyrie, the handles that he shows off in the fourth quarter, dominance that he has, as you referenced, 14 of his 33 coming there in the fourth. They both end up with 33. Like, they have been the difference as they win game three, 116-107. They cover all of the numbers. Total goes over. And with this now, we all know the stat at this point. No team in NBA history has overcome a 3-0 series deficit, 154. And oh, Kyrie Irving was asked about how he feels given that stat.
Going into game four, it's still 0-0. And that's the type of motivation and mentality we have in that locker room. It's not just me. We feel like the job isn't finished, and we're going against one of the greatest teams in the world. You know, they still have the capability of beating us on any given night, and we have to treat them like that. So, you know, it's a time to celebrate after the game, but once I get up here, it's on to the next thing and thinking about my recovery work, putting my kids to bed, watching film, and just getting ready for this war, man, warlike battle that's going to come.
And that's what you want to hear from your leader at this point in the series. That and to your point about what a masterful like rebrand of perception we have of Kyrie Irving at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, guy couldn't get a shoe contract. Remember? I mean, you know, he got lost his shoe deal. He lost everything because of things that had occurred in his life, and he's just completely transformed himself into this player. And Jason Kidd told everybody in Dallas, if we get Irving, well, he'll play well for us. And he's proven to be true. And I think that's the right mentality to have, because one thing we do know about Minnesota is they have really good players too. And they won three road games in Denver. You can't take that away from them. They beat the world champions. And so they're a formidable opponent. And all these three games, I mean, going into last night, the margin of victory in the combined games was 4 points. And then last night was really, it looks like a blowout, but it really wasn't. You know, it wasn't. Dallas built a big lead, had the stupid foul at the end of the half to get it to close it to 7. And then, you know, Minnesota makes their run. And then it was those final 4 minutes. You know, that's the funny thing about sports. So many sports are similar. It's who can close games. Who wins the last 4 minutes of the first half in the NFL? Who wins the last 4 minutes of the game in the NFL? Who closes out in baseball? What closer is effective? In basketball, who can put the ball in the basket when everybody knows they're going to get it? Luka and Kyrie are 22 for 40 combined in shooting. And we said this going into the series. Minnesota has nobody on the team that can cover Kyrie and Luka. They can't stay in front of them. And I think Barkley made a great point that great scorers, it's almost impossible. Mike, you might make Michael work hard. Like Dort made Luka work his butt off, right? But he still got his points. And he was physical with him, and he was beating them up, but he still got his points. And that's the challenge, right? You've got to limit the lobs. You got to limit the other players from beating you. And unfortunately, Minnesota hasn't.
And I mean, going up 3-0 in a series makes it feel on the surface like this has been very one-sided, but these have been three individual, very close games.
Yeah.
The three games have been decided by a total cumulative 13 points here, but the difference has been, as we've talked about, the superstars rising up, and you mentioned those clutch minutes late in the game. Mavs in the regular season were the number one team in the league in clutch time. They are so relaxed and poised in those moments, and then you look at the Timberwolves, conversely, for as great as their defense has been throughout the course of the season, clutch time, they were 22nd in the league, and that really showed up, I feel like, late in games in this series. In terms of the prices, Dallas was a plus 145 dog entering this set. By the time they go up 2-0, they're minus 525. After the game yesterday, minus 1,800 securing game three at home. And if you like that 10-1 on the Timberwolves, as I referenced, you're literally betting on history. It's something that has never been done before. In terms of the look-aheads now as well, Michael, with the Boston Celtics up 3-0 and a potential closeout sweep coming up later on tonight against the Pacers, which we'll discuss, they went from plus 210, already taking money down to plus 190. So people are banking on it being the Mavericks that are in that spot and potentially upsetting the Boston Celtics. How do you feel they could match up with that team in Boston?
I think Dallas can match up with anybody. And I think Dallas having two stars can handle that. And look, one thing we know about the Boston series against Indiana, you could say whatever you want. The reality of it is Indiana could be up 2-1. I mean, Indiana couldn't close the game out. And I think more of it was coaching than it was actual, we didn't have a closer. I mean, they got the first game. They should have won the first game. That was inexcusable what happened in there, but it did. And then the other night, you know, they get, you know, Holiday strips the ball from the Pacers. And the next thing you know, that game's over. They overcame a huge lead. I think, to me, Boston shows vulnerability. We said this on the show yesterday, Stormy. I think Dallas was plus 260 against Boston if you wanted it. And we said yesterday, if they win tonight, that number's going to go down. Now it's plus 190. So it's still a really good number, but you could have had a better number. I don't think you can underestimate Dallas. If you do – you're going to make the same mistake that everybody else has been making in the NBA playoffs, is they're underestimating Dallas. Like, when does Dallas finally realize that this is an elite team?
Yeah.
And they play really well. The chemistry and the camaraderie that you can feel from their team is powerful. I mean, I'm sitting, you know, 1,800 miles away watching it on TV, and I can feel their culture is resonates with me through the screen. You could see it. They're unselfish, you know, whereas I think sometimes the Pacers, I think sometimes somebody wants to be the hero for the Pacers when they're not ready to be the hero.
Yeah, and Michael, with that, because you talk about the games, I mean, the Pacers could be up 2-1, to your point. Game three up as many as 18. They're up 8 with 2:30 to go. Give up that golden opportunity in game one. I was looking up the ESPN win probability numbers there. They had a 98% chance to win game one with 10 seconds left, 95% chance to win game three with 2 minutes to go. And it's just remarkable how things change, and they find themselves down 3-0. Tonight, the Celtics are laying 7.5 right now in Indiana, total 222.5. No Kristaps Porzingis, who's still out with the calf strain. Tyrese Halliburton, questionable, dealing with a hamstring of his own. But Celtics have an opportunity to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals if they can get it done tonight. And actually, as I say that 7.5, Pacers taking a little bit of that plus money, of that plus number there down to 7. So keep that in mind. Okay, we're going to have to hit the break here in a moment. We're just getting started on the Lombardi Line. When we come back to the NFL, we will go, Michael, should we really trust Nathaniel Hackett just because Aaron Rodgers says so? And did this star wide receiver almost get traded on draft night? We'll talk both of those topics and a number of things around the NFL when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the amazing betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN Steve Mackinnon with NBA top plays and breakdowns of the power ratings and trends to know ahead of the two game fours in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've also got daily best bets in the NHL postseason, Major League Baseball, and the WNBA. Plus, if you like the Lombardi Line, you'll love Michael's weekly columns. Don't miss out. Head to vsin.com today.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right. Is it news or is it noise? And I feel like it's just a weekly tradition at this point that we start with a topic relating to the New York Jets. The Jets reportedly looked at hiring someone else to run the offense over Nathaniel Hackett this past offseason. Hackett himself said he was aware of the team's conversations with others, but he feels he's got the full confidence of head coach Robert Saleh. With that in mind, Aaron Rodgers with Adam Schein over the weekend was asked why the Jets and Jets fans should trust Hackett. Here's what he had to say.
Why should I trust Nathaniel Hackett as the offensive coordinator?
Well, you should trust me, and I trust Nathaniel. To me, that's the end of the story. There's been a lot of BS that's been said out there. There's a lot of things that have gone on the last couple of years that he's dealt with that I think he's handled very professionally. And at the end of the day, I think you got to trust him and I's working relationship and the conversation that we have.
If you trust Rodgers, you should trust Hackett. Michael, news or noise?
Well, I think it's news that he went out and really basically said, no more. Like, look at me. Like, you give him credit as a leader. What do leaders typically need to do? They stand in front of those they're leading, which is kind of a unique situation here, right? Because the coach should be leading the player, but in this instance, the player's leading the coach, which is essentially what's going on. And Rodgers is going to make this offense look better. There's no question. It can't look any worse. It was bad in Denver. It's been bad here. It was bad 2 years in Denver. So the question's a fair one. But when you put Rodgers and his defense of it into it, it's going to be better. The question mark that's going to come is, what happens when the game starts, who's making the adjustments, who's fixing everything, and how is everyone getting coordinated. Yeah. The fact that the Jets thought they needed to have someone else, now, could that have come from Woody? I think what's happening here is everybody in the building saying, well, Woody wanted us to look into this so they can have absolution, they can have plausible deniability. But if you're the head coach of the Jets, you have to wonder whether you have enough systematic approach offensively to handle the rigors of the good defensive coaches in the National Football League. I think that's a fair question, and they didn't answer that.
And Michael, I did appreciate Rodgers last week, his self-awareness that, hey, if things don't go right and they don't go to plan this year, we could all be out the door after this, which leads me to a follow-up of, like, what is the limit for the Jets, for this coaching staff to still have their jobs next year? Like, do they need to win a division title and win at least one playoff game? Or what do you think is the realm for which they need to stay?
I think that's a great question, Stormy, because if you got a 41-year-old quarterback and you win and you get to the wild card and you lose a wild card game, are you really sure you can get back there again in next year with a 42-year-old quarterback? Like, I'm not saying they have to win the Super Bowl, they are going to lose their job, but there's no long-range plan here, right? What, Jordan Travis is going to be the heir apparent to Rodgers? I don't know that. It's certainly not Tyrod Taylor. So it's a fair question you ask, because what is the long term? I think this is everybody's in survival mode here at the Jets. The general manager wants to survive. The head coach wants to survive. And Rodgers wants to help them all survive, because they've given him everything he's wanted. I don't know what's the measurement of success. To me, it has to be a Super Bowl, because to say it, lose a wild card game and come back at 42 years old, we're calling them the Ifers now. What are they going to look like next year? The Ifers squared?
Fair point. To be the AFC's representative in the Super Bowl, the odds sitting at 11-1. Win total for the Jets, 9.5. It is juiced to the over at -150. Rodgers, 16-1 in the MVP market. Even money for comeback player of the year. The second shortest shot on the odds board for comeback player of the year is Joe Burrow, Michael, who's coming back from a torn ligament in his right wrist. And there have been a lot of questions about the recovery from this injury. He reportedly has faced no limitations so far, and his offensive coordinator, Dan Pitcher, said, quote, "We designed the whole thing to stay within the constraints of where the medical people think he should be and where he wants to be right now. But nobody's sitting here with a pitch counter. We have been smart about how we put things together." Also said he was really happy Burrow has all his range and power. News or noise?
I think it's noise. I mean, if he was out there, what's he out there for if he's not out there ready to go? I mean, we all fully expect Joe Burrow to be 100%. Now, the question is, you know, he's had these injuries before. You know, some guys have gotten hit with their hand on helmets and it's a problem. And Burrow happens to be one of those guys. He has some hand injuries that have happened in the past, and they're going to have to do a good job about that. But I fully expect him to be 100%. I think the bigger question in Cincinnati isn't Burrow's health. Is the offensive line, Trent Brown, not part of OTAs? He's got a million excuses why he can't show up. And is Mims going to be good enough? I think that's the bigger question on this team.
8 teams in the NFL with win totals 10.5 or higher. Cincinnati's one of them. Good news, they have a last place schedule. Bad news, they play in the AFC North. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler has reported 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk is looking for Amon-Ra St. Brown money. St. Brown's extension gives him $28 million a year through 3 years. And it looks like Ayuk is gunning for something in that neighborhood, Michael. News or noise?
Well, I think it's news, but why wouldn't he want the same deal? I mean, this is what happens is water seeks its level. One guy gets a deal done, the next guy. And Ayuk's a huge part of what the 49ers do, because when you break down the 49er passing game, everything happens inside. They don't have an outside. Ayuk gave them 17 yards per catch this year outside the numbers. They don't have that. As good as Debo is in terms of run after the catch and basically being a running back playing wide receiver, you know, they need a guy who could run routes and win on third down, and Ayuk has developed into that role. So I have a feeling, to me, I think what's tying all this up, I think they want to pay Ayuk. I think they don't want to pay Ayuk and Samuel and Debo. I think they're trying to make some decisions on this if they can. But I think right now it's been a little iffy to do that.
We'll see how the 49ers are able to maneuver things. Where things sit right now, Ayuk set to make $14.1 million in base salary this year. Another piece of interesting wide receiver news that came out this week. In a Sunday column of Charlie Walters from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, he writes, there was buzz at draft time that the Vikings wanted to move from number 11 to number 5, but it wasn't for a quarterback. Instead, to get LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers, who was ultimately picked at 6 by the Giants. Had that trade occurred, Justin Jefferson would have been traded, and Nabers would have been the number one receiver. Big if true, Michael. The Vikings, of course, trying to figure out what to do with Justin Jefferson in a contract we expect to reset the wide receiver market. News or noise here?
I think this is real news, and I think it's true. And I think if you're doing your job as a general manager of the team, what you don't want to do is pay. You want guys on rookie contracts. And so what they were willing to do is exactly what they did with Stephon Diggs. They've done it once before. They traded Diggs. They picked Jefferson. They get rid of Diggs' huge contract. They bring Jefferson in at a cheap number for 5 years. Now, do they pay Jefferson $35, $36 million above and beyond, make him the highest paid receiver? Or do they go get Nabers for 5 years and essentially get the same player? Now, it's potential, but the same characteristics that Jefferson had. I think it's the right thing to do. Now, you say, well, what would have happened with the quarterback? Well, they would have gotten a boatload of draft picks for Jefferson. Somebody would have given them two number ones for that. There's no question. And had they done that, they would have been in good shape. I think this is just good general managing. And don't take it personally. That's just what it is. And not enough teams think like this. They fall in love. Look, I love Jefferson. I love him. I think he's great. Right? But when he eats up all the cap and we don't have enough to build a team, how do we run that? How does that happen for us? That's the challenge. So we'll see. I mean, if somebody's willing to pay them $33, $34 million and give you a bunch of draft picks, you got to seriously consider that. You really do, assuming you can hit on the draft picks.
Very interesting. Jefferson 15-1 in the Offensive Player of the Year odds. Vikings, not very high expectations. Win total sitting 6.5. Last offseason, the 49ers traded away Trey Lance to the Dallas Cowboys. He ended up being their QB3 last year. He's gunning for QB2 behind Dak Prescott and says he's at his best mentally, physically, and spiritually, knowing who he is, where he is, and able to be present. News or noise, Trey Lance entering right. Quarterback 2 battle with Cooper Rush.
Well, he has to be on it, right? And I think there's no more pressure on. I mean, when you get all the draft picks traded for you and you come in as the guy who's supposed to carry the franchise and be the face of the franchise, you have all this pressure. And frankly, not a lot of guys are ready to handle it. I think now what Lance is really saying is, I have no pressure on me. I can just go play, which might be good. But until we watch him play, when the game is speeded up, not preseason, when the game's speeded up, we still won't know.
Yeah, haven't seen anything in an NFL game yet to prove that he can be the guy, but we'll see. Okay, we've got to take a quick timeout on the other side of the break. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, will join us. How's tonight's game 4 in the Eastern Conference Final getting bet?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We here at the Lombardi Line are always here to help you out. And for a limited time, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription when you use the promo code Lombardi. Usually $240. You can now secure your subscription for just $199. And if you sign up today, we're throwing in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code Lombardi. But hurry, this special offer is only available until May 31st. With VSiN Pro, you gain instant access to our daily best bets, complete with a leaderboard showcasing the hottest VSiN experts, betting splits that reveal where the money and bets are trending for every game, exclusive betting splits, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, and more. Remember, though, this offer expires May 31st. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe now and grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for $199 with the promo code Lombardi.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk when you're step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now. Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves, stepping into the office here first, Michael. He was drawing comparisons to a young Michael Jordan early in the postseason on an unbelievable run, but now, shooting just 38.6% from the field in three games against the Mavs. He went 11-24 in game three, certainly had his moments, but took just three shots in the fourth quarter of the loss. What does Edwards need to do to avenge these losses and cement himself as an NBA star?
Well, he's first got to understand that Michael Jordan didn't win a title his first year in the league or his second year in the league, that there was a learning process. There is a learning curve. And that learning curve requires extreme hard work, the dedication, the willingness to get back into the gym as soon as the season ends, take a couple days, but get right back at it again and understand that this is the long game. And I think by the wear and tear of the season and how much he's had to work on defense, you know, he can even improve as elite conditioning as most of these NBA players are. They can get better in conditioning, which allows them to continue to play at the highest level. So to me, this is the greatest learning tool you could have in your life. You get humbled, you know, all of a sudden people that were throwing the flowers at you stop throwing them. And you learn that you're going to have to go back to the drawing board and improve. And I think this is great. It's not what you've done. It's what will you do. And what you can do moving forward. Jordan experienced it, and he broke through, and all of a sudden he dominated. But it wasn't an overnight sensation. I think that's the message.
Mavs are minus 1,800 in the series. Timberwolves 10-1. If you think they can come back and make history, no team has ever come back from down 3-0 in an NBA playoff series. Also down 3-0, the Indiana Pacers, as their head coach Rick Carlisle steps into the office. This Pacers playoff run has been defined by losing close games. The Pacers are the first team to lose multiple games in a series after leading by at least 5 in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter in the last quarter century. What does Carlisle need to focus on heading into game 4 and this offseason?
Well, I think what Carlisle has to be is accountable, because if he's going to hold his team accountable, this is really a defining moment as a coaching career. You know, you can't just say we got to play better. You can't say we made mistakes. You can't say we turned the ball over and absolve yourself from the blame. You've got to stand in there with him. And I think ultimately he's got to stand in front of his players and shield the blame towards them and take the blame himself. And that'll carry favor over into next year, because look, they've accomplished a lot so far this year. Nobody thought they would get here. They were grueling and they played a lot tougher against the Knicks than all of us, me included, thought they could. And I think he's got to really be willing to humble himself in front of his team. And if he can do that, then the other teams will be accountable. Well, everybody wants accountability, except they want you to be accountable, except them to be accountable, right? It's always somebody else's fault, not yours. And I think Carlisle, if he's going to have a culture of accountability moving forward, he's got to accept accountability for the failures in game one, the failures in game three, and frankly, as Thomas Gable said, almost retreating in game two.
Pacers have taken a little bit of money this morning, down from a 7.5-point dog to 7, total 222.5. Tyrese Haliburton listed as questionable, and no Kristaps Porzingis on the other side for the Celtics. Let's go to the New York Jets. The Jets reportedly looked at hiring somebody new to go over Nathaniel Hackett this offseason. That did not play out. And Aaron Rodgers recently tried to calm the concerns of Jets fans by saying on Adam Schein's show this weekend, "You should trust me, and I trust Nathaniel." How should Nathaniel Hackett approach this offseason as offensive coordinator after consecutive years of poor performance?
Well, I think he's got to know the pressure's on him. And, you know, he's got to actually get to a relationship with the quarterback where it is a coach relationship, because right now it's not a player-coach relationship. It's a coach-coach relationship. And I think that Nathaniel's got to be willing to grow and listen, because everybody else around him is going to blame him. And he's got to look it straight in the eye, and he's got to be overly prepared, and he's got to show that he's got answers for the team. Because if it's all just going to be Rodgers, then what do we need a coach for? And we know great players need coaches. And I just think, to me, he's got to demonstrate to the entire team in the fourth quarter of a game that he's going to call the right plays, be in the right situation, and make the right things happen. And that's something that only we're going to get to games. What you do in preseason, what you do in training camp, isn't going to win any favors. But to win a big game, to be there at the end, to be right there and need that, he's going to need to prove he can handle that and make the adjustments. And he show leadership, right? show that sideline that he's got it under control. He can't have that blank stare.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do because the players got to buy into him. Because here's what's going to happen. They're going to just look for Aaron for the answers. They're going to be on the sideline. They're going to say, well, Aaron, what do you think we should do? How do you think we should handle this? Right? Somebody's got to help Aaron. Aaron doesn't have all the answers.
Yeah, and you look at last year's numbers, worst red zone offense in the NFL, worst third down team, third worst points scored per game, second worst yards per game. And yes, the quarterback is a large factor. Yes, the offensive line is a big factor in that. But the coordinator part of it is huge too. And something that was such a big takeaway and concern for me last year is how they built everything around Aaron Rodgers so much so that Hackett couldn't get out of his own way even when Zach Wilson was in there. Even when there was another quarterback, instead of playing to his strengths, he continued to do what was already set up instead of understanding your personnel and that changes need to be made. So we'll see how things look now with Rodgers back, and hopefully he stays healthy so we can get a glimpse of what we thought we were going to get last year. Jerry Jones steps into the office, Michael. The topic of conversation at Cowboys OTAs has surrounded the big three with CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott, and Micah Parsons, all with extensions and new contracts looming. If you're talking to Jerry Jones today, what kind of pressure is there on him to get these deals done? Or are you recommending he remains flexible like he has been in a do-or-die season upon us?
I think Jerry's smart enough to block the noise out, right? I think Jerry, there's more to this than meets the eye. He's got everybody wondering when they're going to get paid. And there's an old adage, the hungry soldier is the best soldier. So he's got Mike McCarthy on a one-year deal. He's got all these other players on one-year deal. He's going to sign them. I mean, Jerry's not afraid to spend money. And Jerry's not frugal, nor is Jerry cheap. So I think patience is a virtue, right? I think he's gotten down this hole where he has been before, which is we're paying all this money for a quarterback and we haven't been able to win the game. I think he understands it. Look, remember, when he hired Mike Zimmer, it took a while to hire Mike Zimmer. He wasn't committed to giving long-term deals out. I think there's more here than meets the eye. I think Jerry is going to be on a look-and-see basis. And I know he's older and he doesn't like change. But Steven's younger, and Steven probably knows they may need some change if they can't duplicate the success they've had last year. It's going to be an interesting year, but I don't think he should panic because, look, the one thing we know for sure, nobody's going to fire the owner.
I agree. I don't think he should panic, but I can't imagine the level of frustration there must be when you're being known as a regular season team, 28 straight years you haven't been able to make the NFC Championship game. Last one here, Caitlin Clark steps in after entering the WNBA as with the most fanfare that we've ever seen for a number one pick. Her Fever team is just 1-6. She's averaging 15.5 points per game, but the turnovers, there have been a lot of them. She's having a hard time living up to what have been sky-high expectations. What advice do you have for her as she tries to find her footing in this league?
I think that the only thing she can satisfy is herself. She has to have a standard of excellence that she comes to every game. And she's got to stop looking at these huge jumps. Like, you're not going to go from 8 turnovers down to 1 in the game. You know, you've got to have a little bit of a standard of excellence, but you also have, you must have a way to measure your success. You really need these things that come into play where, okay, we're making what we call, are we making progress, right? Are we going in the right direction? And incremental improvement looks for that. And I think she just needs to do that. You can't get better at everything during the season. You can only get better at one thing. And she just needs to really sit down and study her game and say, what do I need to get better at? What's the number one thing hurting me right now? And then just work diligently on that.
I can't remember where I read it, but I saw an interesting tweet scrolling through yesterday that was like, Caitlin Clark is fine, she's going to be fine, but what people like us and casual viewers are recognizing is that some of these players and teams in the WNBA are pretty dang good, and it's not going to be easy. We'll be right back. Herm Edwards is going to join us next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, our own Steve Mackinnon with NBA top plays, power ratings, and trends to know ahead of two potential game four closeouts in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Plus, daily best best bets in the NHL postseason, Major League Baseball, WNBA, and of course your fill of NFL offseason content, the league that never sleeps. Don't miss out. Head to VSiN.com today. And speaking of the NFL offseason content, nobody better to get into it all with than Herm Edwards, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. ESPN NFL analyst, former head coach in the league for the Jets and Chiefs, played for a decade before that. And Herm, Michael's been sharing a lot of the contract perspective in the offseason from a general manager. I'm curious for you as a head coach, what's it like in the offseason when you have players that are showing up or not showing up? You're being bombarded by media about guys not being there. Like, how tough is that from your side of things?
Well, it's not tough in this sense, because this has become the norm in the National Football League, that the OTA system that has been implemented now is only, what, 8 practices. And so you know some of your star players aren't going to come. Some of them are still negotiating contracts. And I would always address the team this way. I would tell them this, look, if a guy's not here for OTAs and it's, you know, one of the veteran players, I said, don't worry about it. I said, just see how he handles it, because this is the business side of the NFL now. We don't play any games. We're not even close to playing any games, but this is the business side. And maybe one time in your career, you're going to be in the same situation that these players are in. See how they handle it. With that being said, when guys were not there, I made sure that I talked to them every day. And I didn't talk to them about the contracts. That's not my job. I just talked to them about being the head coach and really how they were doing. And that's all I concerned myself with. So you can make it a distraction if you like, but it's really not, because it's become the norm, to be quite honest.
Yeah, no question. And look, you can only control what you can control. And the season's so far away. But let's talk about that season for a second. Herm, what team have you thought of as you look back after the draft and the offseason program, and I mean the offseason free agency and the draft? What team kind of has caught your eye that no one's really talking about that you think are going to be better than they really are?
Well, I think, you know, the team that really had, you know, they came right out the gate. And I don't say this, you know, often, but I think Chicago is a team that's very interesting all of a sudden. In the fact that everyone knew they wanted a quarterback, they ended up getting him, obviously, unless you take somebody else, obviously. But you look at this football team and you kind of scratch your head and you go, okay, they were 2-4 in the division. I get that. They were a 7-10 football team. They finished 5-3. And now you've got a quarterback. They're excited about it. They've added some offensive players in free agency as well as in the draft. The defense played pretty well last year. They were 12th. Now, they were 25th against the pass. Now, they got to get better against that, obviously. But they're in a division that's very competitive, and I like the way they finished. Right? They finished. And the talk of the division, obviously, is the Detroit Lions. I get it. The Green Bay Packers. I get it. But the Chicago Bears are a team that's just kind of sitting there. And no one's kind of pinning. They got the quarterback, okay. But I'm like, hey, guys, you know, with this quarterback, if he can do what we anticipate him to be able to do, the ability to play off schedule, and now they have some legitimate weapons on offense, they're interesting.
Yeah, and the odds at the top of the NFC North are very compact. The Lions, to your point, are the favorite at +150, but the Packers and Bears are sitting right there quietly trying to work their way up. The Bears, coach, are one of two teams in the NFL this year that have 6 of their final 8 games in division. The Steelers, the other one, and we know what a gauntlet that's going to be the back end of the year for them. What do you think of having to play so many division games in the latter portion of the year? Do you like that or dislike that with the schedule?
I actually like it, because now you can control the outcome of the division, because you actually play the games against division opponents, and players know how important that is. And I think when you have a quarterback, a rookie quarterback, it's even better, because now he has experience playing in the National Football League. And early in the season, and Mike knows this, the first 4 games in the regular season anymore, because the guys don't, they wear baseball hats. All the veterans wear baseball hats. Like, you know, the first 4 games, it's almost like the preseason, but they count because you're not in shape to play football. Football's bad. The first month of regular season football now is bad. It's bad football. And there's equal footing. If you have a veteran quarterback, you probably have the advantage. If you got a young quarterback, you know what? You go, okay, I got a young quarterback. He's playing now. He's going to play early. Not going to hurt me a whole lot because the division games are in the end. So that helps you. But the first four games of the season now, to me, they're like preseason games. You're not in shape as an athlete. These guys know it. You have to practice football. You actually have to practice the game of football. You just can't walk and have walkthroughs and say, oh, I'm ready to play. No, 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 you're not. You're not ready to play. No, and I say this as a former player. And so it's kind of up for grabs. The season starts after week four for me. That's when it gets interesting.
Yeah, it does. Okay, you've been in that seat in New York at the Jets. There's a lot of pressure on you. With Aaron Rodgers coming back, and we know, you know, he went and stuck up for his offensive coordinator, although we know the organization may not feel the same way. How do you think this is going to unfold in New York? We call them the ifers here because if they stay healthy and if everybody plays good, they can be good. But can they?
Well, they got the quarterback. And you're talking about a defense that ranked, fifth in the national, ranked three in the National Football League. They were pretty good defensively. Now, they couldn't score any points on offense, only 16 a game. They were 2-4 in the division, 7-10 record. Offense is almost dead last, 31st. You're not going to have a 31st ranked offense with Aaron Rodgers. And you're not going to be 30th in passing football with Aaron Rodgers. Now, their run defense is not very good. The Jets. Now, they got to improve that. But they're a team, and I think coming right out of the gate, it's interesting who they schedule them with. San Francisco 49ers, a team that Aaron Rodgers, his whole career, has disdained for the 49ers because they didn't draft the guy because he went to Cal. He wanted to play for the 49ers. They didn't do it. And you have the former defensive coordinator, Saleh, coming back to play a perennial playoff team, to play maybe one of the better teams in the NFC. So for me, I think the Jets, when you look at them, they were, 7-10, 2-4 in the division. And Aaron Rodgers played, four plays. They have to be able to say, we can compete to win this division. They're in the hunt with Buffalo and Miami. I think New England is going to take a step back. They still got to regroup. There's a lot of things going on there. But I think they got a chance to win the division, the Jets.
Yeah, if they can navigate the health and the noise and all those things, it certainly seems like things could be set up for them. I also wanted to ask you about the Raiders. Michael wrote a column last week about how challenging it is for a coach to go from that interim position and switch to being the head man and the different responsibilities that there are there. You know Antonio Pierce extremely well. He was your defensive coordinator at Arizona State. How do you think he'll navigate this transition?
Oh, AP will be fine. He is equipped for the job, and he couldn't be in a better place with the Raiders. You know, he grew up a Raider guy. He's a Los Angeles, and he grew up in L.A. Now, the hidden gem for him is Marvin Lewis. You know, Marvin Lewis was part of his staff. Marvin Lewis was part of that staff at Arizona State as well. And Marvin was his coach when he was in Washington as a linebacker. Marvin was the defensive coordinator there. So I think he has someone to lean on there. But he's fit for the job. I mean, the Raiders played with a lot of energy when AP was the interim coach. The players really kind of liked him, you know, and quietly kept in their division as good as Kansas City is. They were 11-6. And they weren't, you know, when it became the last month of football, Kansas City became Kansas City. Now, they were 4-2 in the division. Well, the Raiders were 4-2 as well. So this team, and because it's the Raiders too, this is AP's bringing back that old mindset of the Raiders, that they're the bullies of the league, right? And Mike knows this. I mean, when I was in the league, boy, you love playing the Raiders. The guys with the one patch, you know, they were the bullies of the block. They were the bad guys, you know, and he's using that. And these players are buying into it. So it's going to be fun to watch these guys play this year.
Herm Edwards, you are awesome for giving us some of your time today. We really appreciate you.
Pleasure's all mine.
Thanks, Herm. Happy Memorial Day. Enjoy. Thank you so much.
Anytime, brother.
Herm Edwards doing a great job over there at ESPN, one of their NFL analysts, of course, former head coach and player. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, final thoughts on the NBA Conference Finals, and we revisit our NFL contract negotiation talk from hour one. Are the Cowboys playing with fire when it comes to Micah Parsons? We will be right back.